Do they dream of hell in heaven? Are they restless with their reward? Does God spend time with his angels, or does he show them no regard?
He landed in Veracruz. The beauty made his teeth grind. He took the first train to Mexico City. He arrived destitute, but this prestigious friend from Paris had secured a lecture for him at the Children's Teatro. His subject was the idiocy of communism and genitalia. He thought it went very well. He used the lecture money to buy blank paper and codeine. Later, he fell down and he couldn't get up. Mon Dieu, he cried, but he couldn't get up. A teenage passerby kicked him in the face. He woke up filthy in this infirmary. On the street outside, a violin was playing.
We're talking about Antonin Artaud, and we're here with Terry Allen, artist and songwriter, and Joe Harvey Allen, who are doing a production which opens this Friday night at the Lensic in Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mary Sharma.
So Antonin Artaud is the subject of the verses that you just read, and is the character about whom you, the real life character about whom you have crafted this piece that's at the Lensic. Who was he?
He lived in the 30s. He was, he died in 1948, but he was a very prominent French artist and kind of visionary theater person in the 30s and 40s, and influenced a lot of people like Patti Smith, Sam Shepard, the Living Theater, Peter Brook. Had a huge impact, I think, on the idea of what theater was, what art is. I first encountered him in a book in San Francisco in the early 60s. There was a book just called Artaud Anthology, and it was one of the first books where Artaud's writings were available in English. There was a series of photographs of his face in this book, and I'd never heard of the guy. I didn't know French or anything. I was in art school at the time, but these images of this guy's face had such a huge impact on me that I got the book. Then I began reading the writings and poems and things that he did, and over the years I was just very interested in his ideas. And I think he was one of those people that, because he was a drug addict, he was seriously mentally ill. He had numerous psychological and physical problems. But probably more than any artist that I've ever read about or heard about, he took those ailments and used them productively and made these incredible things out of it. The piece that we're doing, Go Ship Rodez, is about an incident that happened in his life. He had gone to Ireland, found this stick, and took it back to France with him, and had kind of convinced himself it was a staff of St. George. And
also Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And before that, Jesus Christ.
He went back and forth.
Then he took this kind of momentous trip to Mexico. He had had a theater in France that had been a terrible failure, called the Theater of Alfred Jarry. And he put on all of these productions that were not successful at all. And so, very depressed, he decided he would go to Mexico and kind of refurbish himself by take the peyote ceremonies with the Tarahumara. So he was in Mexico 6 months. And when he returned to France, he decided he should take this staff back to the Irish people and give it to them. So he took the staff back to Ireland, got into a big altercation with the cops, hit a cop on the head in Dublin with the staff. They confiscated it, threw him in jail, and and deported him and put him on a ship called the Washington. And he caused so much trouble on the ship that they straitjacketed him and chained him to a cot. And he was in that ship for 17 days in the dark.
That's a kind of a version of hell.
Yeah. And that's really, it's that 17 days that is the impetus for this piece, what might have happened in his head during that time. Rodez is a mental institution, one of the many that he was in after he arrived back in France. He was never out of institutions again. He had over 50 electric shock treatments in Rodez. But also, it was a period, one of his very most productive periods. He started drawing, he started writing again.
Well, the electroshock is so controversial, but I was reading somewhere about him that he actually became more productive after they started the electric shock.
Yeah, he did, which is pretty amazing. Seems to me like the last thing you'd want to do is be productive when you're fried.
He was a huge influence. I mean, to be such a failure in his own, he was really an outcast. The surrealist, he was always fighting them. Everybody was mad at him. No one would, you know, he had a radio show. They took it off the air. Everything he did was pretty much a failure, but he had such an impact, his ideas, and he was brilliant, really, and it influenced so many artists and actors and writers. And I was 35 when I wrote my first play, and Terry gave me Theater and Its Double, his book. And the thing I remember most was that it really forced you or inspired you to be more courageous and to approach work in a different way. And there was a breakdown scene I did in this play, and after reading that book, I would experiment with things. I would go, well, what does the dog think about listening to Muratzad loud in the living room? And I would be crawling around on the floor. What does it feel like to be crawling in the bushes naked like an animal outside listening to this or that? And that's how I actually got the breakdown scene in the first play, but it pushed boundaries for me. And I think that's what he did for a lot of people.
Well, he had a theater he called the Theater of Cruelty. And it wasn't really about sadism overtly, but it was about challenging habits and taking everything, whether it was your voice, your body, your religion, whatever it was, taking it as far as you possibly could beyond your habits. He despised drawing room drama. He thought that theater should be like a visceral experience for the viewer, for the actor, for everybody involved. So his whole focus was on challenging the things that you think are normal and the things that you would consider habits. He was one of those people. He was a child of kind of a secondary incest. His two grandmothers were sisters, so his mother and dad were first cousins. Because of this, he had meningitis when he was very young. Because of that, he had headaches, horrible headaches his entire life, which kind of brought about his drug abuse. It wasn't so much recreational drug abuse as it was really kind of battling pain, and he was constantly trying to detox. But he had a number of mental kind of maladies. One of the things that he thought was that his brain could not think. And he wrote these incredible, thoughtful letters about how he couldn't think. And it was constantly pointed out to him by psychiatrists and by friends or whatever, but look how thoughtful this is, you know.
He was haunted by these horrific demons. And all the women in his life that haunted him, that were fabrications in his mind, he called the daughters of the heart to be born. And in the play, I am the daughters of the heart to be born. So I am a combination of the bitch, the clairvoyant, the mother, the lover, these various women. And I also try to become the voice of Artaud as we imagined maybe his way of surviving this horrific ordeal when he's like chained to this cot in the hull of this ship, the Washington. And an interesting thing happened in our own life while Terry was writing this piece, that we actually went to the places, and it had nothing, just coincidental, but we went to Ireland, to Mexico, where the Tahamara are, and we also went to France. So we were in these places that the play, the locations of that take place of this period of time in his life where he was. So a lot of the writing was influenced by that, and it's interesting for me because there are things that when Terry gave me the script, I knew exactly where they were written and
right.
what they were, because I'd been in that beautiful garden that he was thinking about in the hull of this ship to free his mind.
We're talking to Terry Allen and Joe Harvey Allen about the performance coming up at the Lensic this weekend, Friday and Saturday at 8 o'clock, called Ghost Ship Rodez. And you also have an installation at Site Santa Fe as part of their one-on-one exhibition, which has videos and installations and all sorts of things. And this is all about the exact same material, this Artaud material, and includes video installation and art and a lot of text. Is it similar? Is it some of the same text that you use in the play?
Well, I think of the piece, Ghost Ship Rodez, as two parts. One is at the exhibition, which is at Santa Fe, and the other is the theater piece, which is at the Lensic. So combining the two together is the single piece.
Right.
Most of the work at Site Santa Fe focuses on the Mexican trip that we were talking about. When he was, that there's like five chronicles called the Momo Chronicles, and Artaud called himself Le Momo.
What does that mean?
It means kind of a charmed idiot. It comes from voodoo, I think, actually, somewhere in the Caribbean. But he called himself this kind of lunatic, which was echoed when he went to the Tarahumara Indians. They were extremely afraid of him. They called him El Brujo, the witch man.
They thought he could predict the end of the world, and he knew when people were going to die, and they were really frightened of him.
And, you figure this crazy Frenchman goes out and lives in extreme squalor in the middle of the desert with these Indians. You can imagine kind of what they thought of him, and no language connection whatsoever. Just only this desire to do peyote with him.
It's funny that he didn't learn the languages of the places he went. I mean, apparently part of his problem in Ireland was they had no idea what he was trying to say.
Yeah.
He didn't learn a word of English.
Yeah, and he didn't know Spanish. He did know, toward the end of his life, a little bit of English, I think. But, again, I think that kind of addresses that thing. He thought not just theater, but life was beyond language. So language was just one of those things, another thing you had to transcend. You know?
He was so powerful, that idea that he had that theater, everything went beyond what you thought it was. And he is such a powerful spirit that working on this play, I was like, I think a lot of people in France, I really wanted to shun it at first because I was very afraid of his vulgarity. You know, sometimes I do comedy, and this was, it was difficult to play these demons that haunted him and play him. But I grew over the whole process. We did the play first in France, and then we took it to Massmocha, and now finally here. And during that whole process, I grew so fond of him. I actually have a very gentle, loving feeling, and it enabled me, I think, to be free to really play the demons better that haunted him.
Yeah, I was looking at how he lived. I thought, I would not have wanted to know this man.
Right.
But knowing him through his work is a different thing.
It's very different. And his spirit, a lot of strange things have happened in the process of doing this play. So I very much feel his presence.
What kind of strange things?
Well, And now this is very crazy to people who might think it's crazy, but when we were working in France and I was having a difficult time even memorizing the play, I wasn't doing very well at it. And only I saw it, but behind the stage, we had a big staff that was part of the play, and it moved about 4 feet. And I saw it, and I just went, oh, my God. I better pay attention here.
The ghost of Artaud is the here ghost, moving my
it's
staff.
Either the ghost of Artaud, it's the staff of St. George, or the staff of Jesus. Well, I really don't know about the staff of St. George. So I immediately had this conversation with Artaud in my mind, and I really made peace with the peace. And I vowed to try to bring the best. I guess it's kind of like a redemptive good feeling about Artaud because he suffered so much, and we're so afraid of people that are different than us, and we just want to not hear their vulgarity or not pay attention to them. And he had so much to give to be so damaged.
There's a sentence in the exhibition at Site Santa Fe: do they dream of hell in heaven?
Yeah,
tell us more about that.
Well, I mean, it's the idea of, like, the verse is, do they dream of hell in heaven? Are they restless with their reward? Does God spend time with his angels, or does he show them no regard? It's kind of addresses the idea of boredom, I think, eternal boredom. And
like eternal bliss would be boring?
I think Mark Twain talked about, you know, he couldn't think of anything worse than being eternally sitting on a cloud with a bunch of people trying to learn how to play a harp, you know, forever. And so it's just that switch from rather than do they dream of heaven in hell, do they dream of hell in heaven? And it's also, I think it refers to back to life, you know, do people miss their life? Do they miss things about being alive and not just being some kind of splendor? And it works with Artaud, I think, because he was, in a sense, always in a state of being subjected to heaven. And so he was kind of constantly rebelling against that which is perfection, or that which is the norm or the exception.
Have you ever met someone that, and I have, that one day they're an atheist and the other day they're like a religious fanatic? It goes back and forth, and I kind of have this feeling that he was grappling with all of that all the time in his mind. So in this piece, he talks a lot about beauty and angels, and that's with all the other haunting, vulgar things that were happening to him as well.
What was his theater like, this so-called surrealist theater?
It looked pretty, from the photographs I could tell, it looked pretty traditional. You know, kind of costume dramas. And he did one called The Cenci, which was a big flop. But it was about an emperor who was heavy into incest and into murder. And Artaud, kind of the way he thought stage directions were every bit as important, if not more important, than the speeches or the dialogue. So his writing about directions is actually almost more interesting than the actual text. But I don't think it ever, people were just kind of, I think, just mystified by why anybody would do that, except for people like André Breton, a number of surrealists, a number of artists and writers of that period of time. They always supported him. They knew that there was something so unique in his life, in his mind. So he always had this kind of support group, even though a lot of time he would lash out against it. Like these daughters of the heart to be born, he would write spells, terrible spells, and hope that they died. and he would burn cigarette, you know, burn holes in them and tear them and defecate on them and then mail them. And then he'd start feeling weird about it or bad about it, and so he would write a protection spell and to try to cancel out that spell.
Good heavens.
But all of these people kind of went along with, you know, his quirks. His last piece was called To Have Done with the Judgment of God, which was a radio show, and it was banned after the first performance and really just released about 2 or 3 years ago, reissued. But he worked with a number of, like a guy like Roger Blinn, who was one of the first people at the time to work with Beckett. So he always had this kind of support system of artists, you know, when things were really bleak for him.
How did this piece come about in the first place?
We were doing a play, a piece called War Boy, which is a part of a body of work I did called Dugout in Houston. And there's a group in Houston called the Houston French Alliance. And so the French Council happened to see this piece and came back after the and liked it and asked me if I'd be interested in doing a new piece in France, in Lyon, a year from then, at this place called La Subsistance, which was like a big laboratory for artists, performing artists, circus people, musicians, all the performing arts. So I'd always been interested in Artaud, and I thought this gave me a chance to kind of really start and reinvestigate him and think about and maybe build a piece out of it.
The interesting thing, I think, that happened as a result of doing that in France, we did it in English, and we thought it would be just a bust because of that, for one thing. But the French loved this piece, and the Paris newspaper said, can you believe that Artaud has been delivered, returned to us through Bush country? Because it was such a hotbed of political times with Bush being in office.
Yeah, the freedom of rights thing.
Like, yeah.
You know, that, and pouring wine in the streets. You remember when there was all that issue with France?
Yeah. Haven't we gotten over that level of...
Well, that was right in the middle of it at that time. Yeah. And one of the things that did concern us was like doing this performance, which we were really building and performed it in progress at the time, was the language. We don't know French, and the piece wasn't in French, and we were doing it for a completely French audience. And so they were concerned about it too, because the French notoriously kind of were kind of impatient with theater stuff and would walk out. And so they invited this actor, an American who'd been over the expatriate for like 30 years over there, who came, and we did a special performance for this guy. He really liked the piece. And so every performance, he met with the entire audience for about 30 minutes before and gave them little key things that were happening in the piece, of the structure of the piece, the songs. And I don't know what he said to him or how valuable it was to him, but we got a really good response.
It was funny because, you know, here we're using all these obscenities and everything in the play, and the French were crying at the end of this play and saying, it was so sweet. It was so sweet, which was shocking to us. But it really, I was so happy because I think that idea came across of really honoring him.
And the love that you
have. And the love that we both have for him and respect. But in doing all this horrible, you know, it ended up that they felt that it was sweet. And I was so happy about that.
Well, also the piece is really not profane. It challenges, I think, the idea of what God is to people. It challenges sex. It challenges the two together. It challenges what you think and what you, again, your habits of thinking about these things. So it's not, I think it's threatening in the sense of like that. It points a big finger and says, well, where are you with wherever you are?
It also... I think it addresses some of the things about the time that we're living in and this obsession with greed, gluttony, and me, me, me. One of the the demons actually takes him into the village of Me, which is really a place where he falls into this abyss of me, myself, which is a dark, horrible place we all fall into when we become so self-obsessed. And in that, the people who live in this village are called mimes. The village has a billboard that says, me, mine, mine, all mine. It's a village with no deceptions. Every mine in me wants more. The minds in me walk around and they point at what they want with a finger on one hand and they point at themselves with a finger on the other. But mostly, though, the minds in me only want themselves. When he was led to this village, he was so excited.
Then Joe Harvey does his sermon, The God of Shit.
And it's really about worshiping yourself.
Yeah. And stuff.
Very interesting.
You know, I wanted to say something in the play, and that is that there is a lot of original music and musicians in the play. So it is a musical theater piece.
Music composed by you, Terry Allen.
Yeah.
And it's not like the music we heard right at the beginning of the show.
That song's in it, but not in that form. Yeah.
Well, people will just have to go see it at the Lensic this Friday and Saturday night, April 9th and 10th at 8 o'clock. Terry Allen and Joe Harvey Allen. Joe Harvey Allen stars in The Ghost Ship Rodez. And you can call the Lensic at 988-1234 or go to lensic.org. And also, the other part of this is the installation at Site Santa Fe. And that is going on through the 9th of May. They are at sitesantafe.org. Joe Harvey Allen and Terry Allen, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org. Thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, and you can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, jazz.